In episode 50 of MobiCast, we discuss the tension between creators of open source projects and those that use the software commercially. Welcome to MobiCast, a weekly conversation about cloud native development, AWS, and building distributed systems. Let's jump right in.
Welcome, Chris. It's another episode of MobiCast.
Hey, John. Good to be back.
Yeah, good to have you here. So we're going to talk today about Twitter's favorite topic. We try to not do this all the time because we like to share, you know, useful content for people to, you know, bring to their jobs, and hopefully they learn a little something and go use what they learned as they're doing software engineering, hopefully cloud native, very high quality professional software engineering. But, you know, this is just too interesting. So what has Twitter been talking about? What has the Orange website been talking about? They've been talking about open source, and they've been talking about what you do when open source meets the cloud, and essentially what's been going on with companies like MongoDB that we talked about before, like Redis, and then obviously the huge gorilla that's taking over and just wreaking havoc in some very amazing and very good ways, but also in some negative ways, which is AWS. So I don't want to be the one to introduce this because I think that you've done a little bit more thinking about it and done so in a more organized way. So Chris, maybe you could introduce us here.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, like you said, this is what, you know, very current topic. It's a very active topic and it is changing, you know, day by day. Like there's new things happening here. And really, you know, what it boils down to is there's this tension with the open source community between the folks that are producing or sponsoring its development and then the folks that are actually then using that, consuming it. And so in particular, we're seeing, you know, big public cloud providers and other service providers are operationalizing these open source projects, turning them into production grade services that are fully managed. And that becomes a business model for them to, and it's very profitable for them. The open source providers, they're struggling to find their business model as a producer of that technology or as a sponsor of that technology. And so that's where the tension's coming in. So it's kind of like there's just a lot of pressure there with these open source companies or sponsors of these projects. Like how do we make money? And this feeling of being kind of, I would imagine it's kind of feeling like being taken for granted or being used. They probably feel like they're just being like, hey, we did all this hard work and yet we're not making any of the profits. This other folks are coming in and kind of like just taking away our livelihood. And that's a big problem for us. And so that's the ground level tension that's going on here. And again, it's lots of different players in this space, many, many different open source projects are making changes to their license models. And then you also have on the other side, the players in the consumer space. So the big public cloud providers like AWS, folks like Red Hat, even actually some other open source type communities. So you have, and we'll get into that a little bit more as well. So it's, you got players on both sides of the space, but I think at the end of the day, what this boils down to is what's the business model for open source? Because it's changed from what it was, you know, even 5 years ago. And I think that's what we're dealing with here. I think this is where the tension's coming from, is that the economics have changed, the business model's changed. And I think the open source projects have a big challenge ahead of them to find out how they're going to adapt to that.
So I'm not sure where to go from here. One of the things that I want to get in is just kind of a little bit of a list of some big things that have happened recently. And then I also want to dive into just a couple of thoughts that I had when you started talking about the business model. I guess it makes more sense to lay the groundwork a little bit. So Chris, maybe you could just tell us what's been happening, you know, give us a little bit of a bulleted list of what's happening in the past, you know, weeks, months.
Sure. Yeah. So I think Redis Labs has definitely been at the forefront of this. So Redis Labs, they're sponsoring the Redis project. You know, Redis is a great in-memory database solution that's been around for quite some time right now. You know, just a wonderful, wonderful piece of software, and Redis Labs is kind of the sponsor for that now. And, you know, their business model is they provide that. They have a service offering for for Redis, and they've done some improvements to it as well with Redis modules. So they kind of kicked this off, this latest salvo of license attacks, if you will, back in August of 2018. So they went and they revised their open source license to be modified with the Commons clause. And really what this was this was about making changes to protect them and that project from cloud vendors like AWS, where allowing them to go and monetize this, but not contributing back to the projects in a significant manner, right? So that was the goal of that. And then just recently, just...
Before you say what happened just recently, you just said they had appended the Commons clause to their license, but could you just tell me what that means? What's the Commons clause?
Full disclosure, I haven't read the specifics, but again, what it's attaching restrictions to what you can do and the derivative works.
Right.
So these are just, they're making these licenses more restrictive.
Right. I thought, and this is where I'd love it if somebody would just write to us and tell me that I'm wrong, but I thought that the Commons clause was essentially saying that if you do make changes to this, they need to be open source too. You don't get to go make changes and then commercialize, you know, the core open source part with your changes, but I could be wrong.
And I mean, that's probably pretty much spot on. I mean, this is the common theme, right, with these licenses, that they're either A, saying whatever improvements you do around it, that has to be open source as well, or the licenses are more geared towards saying, like, you know what, you just can't use this as, you can't make money off of this as a service. You can use the software, but you can't make money running it as a service, right? So those are like the two different approaches that the community is taking right now.
Okay, cool. Yeah, and I think that's fair. Without getting into the names of the licenses and the specific legalese, those two business approaches to licensing software, I think that's clearly what's happening. So yeah,
it's impossible to keep up with with all these licenses because there's just so many, right? It's like Apache 2. There's the BSD license. There's now everyone's making their own. They're inventing their own licenses, right?
Yeah.
So we talked about with Mongo, they have the SSPL. That's their server side public license. It's only for Mongo, but they had to come up with a new license just for what their needs were. And now Redis Labs has come out with their own. So, you know, they just days ago came out with a new way of license of attaching the license to the software. And they're calling this the RSAL, the Redis Source Available License.
And so there we are. Back to where we were going originally, just because you were about to say before, just a few days ago. And they put in this new license. And isn't it funny, the name of that license? The name of that license just sort of feels like a trip down memory lane. Redis Source Available License just really feels like, oh yeah, I feel like I've bought some enterprise products that have that feature before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So just getting, you know, super interesting to see that even the first iteration of this wasn't restrictive enough for Redis Labs. They still weren't happy with it, weren't seeing the traction. And so, you know, just spending more energy in this space to come up with other ways of like what approaches they can use for it. This new license it specifically applies to Redis modules that have been created by Redis Labs. So it's not the actual Redis engine itself. It's and so modules are, you know, it's a way of extending Redis, right? Plugging in new functionality into Redis that's not part of the core Redis engine. So they've done some stuff here in the dealing with like AI and ML and things like Bloom filters and other things. This new license covers that code.
Okay.
So they're saying in this particular license is saying, you know what, you can use this as you want, except you can't integrate it into a DB, a caching engine, a stream processing engine, search engine. Basically, you can't put into an engine, right? is the restriction there. So, you know, again, just trying to find ways to make it so that other folks can't use the software, profit off of it without giving back, or in some cases, just not being able to profit off of it, right? So like, That's the case here with this license with the Redis modules. So you're not going to see Redis modules in ElastiCache, right? It's not going to happen.
Right. And Redis isn't the only one at this. Who else is doing this?
No, as we talked before on a previous episode, so MongoDB, you know, they made a really big change with their license back in October of 2018, and that was fully to go after these software providers, these running it as a service. So MongoDB itself, you know, had said that, look, we need to be able to monetize MongoDB exclusive of cloud competition. And if we can't, then we're not going to be able to sustain the development in this, right? It's not going to be worth our while, which is kind of a, you know, that's a pretty strong statement, and basically saying like, hey, we can't compete with the cloud. And so like, it's kind of imperative for us to kind of just stop that in the bud, right? Like, we don't want to compete with them because we can't. And mm-hmm. So we need to find ways to make it so that we're not competing with them. So there's definitely been, you know, a lot of activity there on Mongo. They have a big spotlight on them as being a public company.
Right.
So like, they have to make money.
Right.
And
they have to grow. Yeah.
And absolutely. They have to grow. So this is a very core issue for them as well. You have other projects out there that are, you know, making moves here as well. They're maybe not as well known, but like Confluent recently did this as well. They just came out with a new license that they call it the Confluent Community License. And this is one that says, hey, you can use the software, you can modify it, you can redistribute it, but you cannot provide the software as a SaaS offering, right? Mm-hmm. So boom, just gonna make it very explicit. You cannot run this as a service and charge money for it, which, you know, that's pretty strict.
Right, right.
And that's pretty cut and dry.
Yes.
Yeah.
So at this point in the show, if we were Radio Lab, there would be like a DJ scratch and we would say, wait a minute, because I think where we're going next is to say all of these open source sponsored companies like Mongo, like Redis, they don't own their products in the typical sense. Like, they may be changing the license on future versions of those products, but they can only do that because the licenses are open source to begin with. So they're just taking a version and saying, hey, this, we're going to create a commercial product with a different license based on this version of something that is freely available and in the public domain, right? So that's just sort of interesting to me. These companies that, like, I think that the core like cognitive dissonance for me in this conversation is, oh, well, Mongo's changing their license, or Redis is changing their license. And I think that we need to tease that apart and say, no. That is not their code. That is open source code. It does not belong to Redis Labs. And Mongo does not belong to MongoDB. And when they're changing the license, they're just saying, we're going to take a version that we've been working on internally and put a new license on it, which they're totally welcome to do. The previous open source license made that allowable. So I think that's what kind of gives me this aha moment, like, whoa, you're like, okay, you know, just because they built a business around an open source product doesn't mean that they are the open source product. And that just kind of is like, makes me kind of like, I don't even know, just like kind of shake my head like, whoa, this is so weird. What's going to happen now? So I think we'll talk a little bit about that. But before we go all the way there and just really get into what their rights really are and what they should be getting for their contributions to these open source projects, let's talk a little bit about who the open source consumers are. Do you want to just go through that a little bit, Chris?
Right. So obviously the big gorilla here is AWS. Mm-hmm. So AWS has many different open source projects that it's turned into highly available, highly scalable services that are fully managed, that just makes it so easy to use. So Redis is a great example, Memcached, Kafka. You have, you know, we talked about DocumentDB, which is the MongoDB drop-in replacement. You have Elasticsearch. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. There's quite a bit of open source software that has been turned into service by AWS. And, you know, don't make no mistake about it, they've added a lot of, you know, incredible expertise and engineering and lots of resources to make those highly available, highly scalable managed services.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So, and that's kind of like the the core crux of this, of what the competition is about and why folks like Redis Labs and Mongo are having problems and issues, is that this is, and we kind of touched on this a little bit at the beginning, just kind of saying like, hey, the landscape is changing and it's different today than it was 5 years ago. And one of the huge big changes that's happened is that the cloud is here and cloud native development is here and people are running in the cloud. So before that wasn't the case, right? You went and basically everything was kind of on-prem and you were installing software yourself, you were managing it, you were applying updates and patches. And that worked really, really well for the open source community because your business model there was like, we can charge support, right? So give away the software, but people are going to need support on how to integrate with this and how to run it and how to manage it and how to do backups and restores and whatnot. So we'll provide support contracts, right? That's our business model. Works really well. But when you now start offering that product as a service, other companies start offering that product as a service, then you don't need that anymore. Right. So the dollars, they switch, they flow a different way. And that's what this whole argument is now about, right? It's these open source providers are like, the business models that worked in the past for us are not working now. It's really hard for us to compete against these other folks that are cloud companies that know how to run SaaS software. Mm-hmm. Right?
Hey there, this is Rich. Please pardon this quick interruption. We recently passed an internal milestone of 30,000 listens, and I wanted to take a moment to thank you for the support. I was also hoping to encourage you to head on over to iTunes to leave us a review. Positive feedback and constructive criticism are both incredibly important to us. So give us an idea of how we're doing, and we'll promise to keep publishing new episodes every week. Okay, let's dive back in.
So this is a thing that I was thinking right at the beginning of this conversation, and it felt like not quite the right time to say it. And now I think it's the right time to say it. So this is a bit of a simplified statement, and some people might get after me about this, but you know, we've been in the software industry for a long time, and it feels like there's two, if your market is software developers or people that create software and run software, if that's your market, so insiders of the software industry, it feels like there's two hard problems for companies. One hard problem is getting developers to buy/use your software. So I'm in a new database. Hey, everybody, use my new database. It's cool. It's the best. Really, really, really. That is a hard, hard problem. Like marketing to developers is like, oh my God, I just don't even want to. Oh my God, here we are doing it right now as part of this podcast. But you get it, right? It is a hard problem. So the other hard problem is operating software at giant scale. And you know, that problem is the problem that's changed significantly. I think marketing to developers changed several years ago. And now operating software at scale is changing now. And that's where I'm going with this. Marketing to developers was kind of solved with open source. Finally, a way to get developers to use a product without having to call them, email them, bother them. Instead, you just use this like total guerrilla marketing, like, hey, contribute to this open source project or use this free library. Everybody's using it. Oh yeah, I've been using it. I'm talking about it at my meetup. It's so great. All of a sudden, like the good product starts to rise to the top and get used by more and more people. And then when you got a real winner, you know it. And that is a feature of open source, I would say, right? Would you say that?
Yeah, I mean, open source is all about the community, right? Mm-hmm. And it's about kind of having that. It establishes a relationship, right?
Yeah.
Probably a really core fundamental relationship with the software. So it's a huge difference between like buying software versus building software, right? So if you build software, like you have a sense of ownership to it and you're much more loyal to it as opposed to just buying something, you know, off the shelf. That relationship doesn't exist. And yeah, when you're talking to, you know, folks like developers there's a lot of not invented here mentality and like, I can build this thing better. I can design this thing better. It's like open source throws all that stuff out the window. Like open source is fine. You can make it better. Yeah. Submit a PR.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So it solves that really weird marketing problem. And then companies like Red Hat, companies like Confluent come out of that because, you know, they realize the original founders of the open source project. And I'm actually not sure about the founding stories of those two companies I just mentioned, but it is often the case that a company that started or an open source project that started by a few founders, they realize they've got a tiger by the tail. They're seeing their GitHub stars go up and up and up. And they're like, oh my goodness, we've got to do something about this. And they form a company. And that has been just a really neat way for people to realize they have traction, to get potentially venture capital money, and to build something around the open source project that, yes, they mostly did create, but before they ever really got very far with it, they gave it to the world.
Yeah,
that's an important little phrase I just used there. They gave it to the world. They really did, sort of in a legal way, give it to the world.
Yeah, I mean, that's what open source software is, right? Like, I mean, once you make that decision to go open source, I mean, that's the contract, right? I mean, that's the whole premise of it, is that this is something that is given to the community, and it's really not owned by anyone. It's owned by the community. And it's this idea of like, hey, if you find the software useful, use it. And if you can help make it better, and it's all under the promise of like, it's going to grow and it's going to get better from that, mm-hmm. that community. But once you give it, I mean, once you make that decision, right, that to make it a community project, that's what you've done, right? You can't like, you can't now try to turn it into some kind of proprietary thing that you make money off of, like that.
That's where the crux is, right? Because that was the game. That was what people were realizing that they could do. And that was the path to creating a valuable inner working, you know, insider piece of software. Everyone realized, oh, I'm not going to be able to just go make a company and make a new fancy database or something, or a fancy, you know, management system for web applications. Like, I can't go do that as a company. I've got to go get a popular open source project first. And then I can convince people I can make a company around it. And it's such a departure from sort of the peace and love, you know, free software days of the past. It really is like a very strategic, like, I'm going to make this thing, give it to the world, then I'm going to capitalize on it. Mm-hmm. Once the world decides they like it. That is there's a little bit of a tension there. There's a thing that's falling over with the cloud.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, again, I mean, it's just, everything is changing so quickly, business models and just the players and just what opportunities are there. So like, I mean, think back, like, I think a good example here is like the Apache project. Like, that kind of feels a bit more like just the pure play. Like, this is like hardcore, just community projects. And
yep.
Really, like, it's all about just community and sharing and contributing and building something just really, something really great, right?
Yeah, just because it should exist.
Yeah, but okay. It's just really not about money, right? And that's mm-hmm. that's where open source started, and that's where it had been for a while. And then there was the realization is like, wait a minute, we can make money off of this by doing things support, like doing support or training, and some of those efforts paid off very, very handsomely. So like, I'm thinking like, even just recently, like, I'm looking at you, Heptio.
Right.
Like, I mean, that's a great example of it. It's like, you know, Kubernetes is, you know, an amazing piece of technology, and it's grown to be like just so huge. And it's just, I mean, it's just amazing. Like, just all the pieces to it and everything that it can do, but it's been developed by, you know, I mean, I can't even imagine how many contributors have added to the code base, and it's just such a big project. But again, you know, you say some of the creators of that project, they were able to go build a venture funded company, and they just recently had a very, very nice exit on to the tune of $500 million.
Yep.
You know, and that was all built around the business model of like, we will provide training, consulting, and whatever else comes out of it for Kubernetes.
And you know, managed service as well. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, this is such a tough thing. I'm about to say my favorite part of this whole conversation, which is that while there is obviously this disparity between how AWS is taking these products and then just gargantuanizing them, that is a word I just made up.
Yes, you did.
they're doing that, and they're like not making really hardly any new open source projects, or when they do, you know, they're not really, nobody thinks of AWS as the open source company. They may actually contribute quite a bit, but they're not making that a big part of their brand, if nothing else. And versus like the companies like Redis Labs that are like, no, this is ours. Like, this is, don't take this away from us. And so here it is. There's not any difference. Redis Labs was using open source software to make money for themselves. And that's what AWS is doing too. Just because the people that were the first committers to Redis happen to work at Redis Labs, there's not a legal distinction between those things. Like there's not, or really a business distinction between those things. So, you know, it's the same. They're both taking advantage, like they're both.
But they're both trying to make money off of the open source software.
Yeah,
they're,
exactly.
They're basically competing the same way now, right? They're
right.
As a managed service, and they're finding it very, very hard to compete against these other companies like AWS and the other public cloud. And again, that's where this tension's coming from. It's
right.
They're finding it very difficult to compete. It's threatening their business model. So they're trying to find ways to stave off that competition. And it just really feels like this is the wrong approach.
Yeah, right? The relicensing, it just feels off. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's just gonna. I mean, this poses a really big risk to the open source projects, right? So it's either going to, you know, they're gonna lose their communities, right? Because just even individual contributors are gonna be like wondering or scared or wary of contributing to a project that is so strictly licensed, where it doesn't even feel like open source software anymore. And it's kind of lost that whole spirit.
Right. And even if you're not in it for the money, like there's just a, like, if you love working on AWS or Google Cloud and you make a contribution and you get it in to the core and then you see it running there, your own contribution is now running in the big cloud. It's like, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's not a possibility anymore, it's less motivating.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. And then, you know, the other risk here is that these licenses just lead to the other folks just forking that code base and making brand new derivative works,
which
that are now proprietary, right? That they're not open source. And so what happens is, you know, you can think of it as like a, you know, a tree and branching, and like the trunk's just withering,
mm-hmm.
you know, as, and maybe that's not the best analogy, but you get the, I mean, it's, the open source projects are at risk of withering because they lose their community. They're not getting the kind of focus anymore because people now have to choose. Do I go with MongoDB or do I go with DocumentDB? Like,
right.
You know, does the licensing of the SSPL cause AWS to start splitting off DocumentDB from Mongo, where it's now a superset of MongoDB, and now people have to choose. Do I go with DocumentDB or do I stay with MongoDB? Like, who am I going to bet on?
Right.
And, you know, so that is a really big risk here for the open source projects.
It's a huge risk.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not just a risk to those projects, but I feel like it's a risk to the world, right? It's like, there's no doubt that open source projects over the last 10 or 15 years have accelerated the pace of innovation and creation in software. Everybody's benefited by the ultra rapid advancement of these open source projects. And then now everybody's benefiting by not having to even work with those open source projects to get them to run at scale by those being in the public cloud. So everyone's winning, except for, unfortunately, the original contributors to those open source projects and the companies that were created by those people. So that, I don't know what to do about that exactly, but I certainly don't want to lose this thing that we've created. How can we retain that? And this is kind of getting into the conclusions of this conversation. It's like, how do we get the good parts of what we have without having a bunch of essentially like Stan Lee's, like creator of Spider-Man or you know, all the Marvel comics that didn't get a bunch of money until way late in life? Like, how do we motivate the creators that want to share their work with money? And it's like, without bringing back the old problem of like, how do you market to developers? Because open source is an absolutely wonderful solution to that problem. So I want to not try to think of different solutions to that problem. I just want to think of different solutions to the problem of potentially an open source project getting picked up by a big cloud provider and then only making the cloud money. Any ideas?
It's a tough challenge for the open source projects and the folks that were trying to have business models built around that, because again, it's change, right? So it's like, I think, you know, my advice is like, you can't compete against the big service providers in that space, right? So it's like,
right,
that's not your core competency as the OSS, as the open source provider or sponsor. Like, you're not gonna do better at offering that as a service than, you know, these big companies like AWS. And even if you were, you still have the problem with like everyone, their code, all of their infrastructure and software and services all are running inside of that AWS cloud. And then you now have to, you have this separate external entity thing, and you know, how do you make that efficient, and
right,
all the other extra plumbing that has to go on top of that makes it kind of a really difficult fit. So I think, you know, what has to happen here is that the open source project companies that are trying to make business models out of that software, they need to come up with new ways of making money that are different from the past. Like, you know, the traditional support is not going to cut it, you know, necessarily going forward. And then, you know, offering that as a service isn't going to support that. So got to find another way. And so, you know, maybe like the right way to do this is actually what Redis Labs is doing. Create a plugin system and make money off the modules, right? Like that's actually a really great model. So keep so you have the core project is there, and that is what's open source and free. But you know, what is your secret sauce? What is the company that you're building to kind of focus on this open source project and to make money off of it? You got to bring something unique to the table, right? You can't just say we're gonna like sponsor a team of developers to go work on it. It's got to be, you gotta have something else, some extra value. So just figure out what that is that you bring to the table and make that proprietary and make that your business model. Do something that's going to make it hard for other people to compete against with.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, you could do this with Mongo. You could do it with, I mean, Redis. You can do, I think there's models out there for all this stuff. So just don't try to compete head to head with someone like Amazon in the SaaS space. You will lose.
Yeah. And you know, it's like, it's a little unfortunate because it may mean that for open source ideas, there are going to be fewer unicorns in the future, but it doesn't necessarily mean that there isn't like really good potential to make, you know, change your life money on getting a good open source project out the door. Didn't NPM just release an enterprise version of NPM? Kind of interesting. It's like they're kind of thinking differently than other open source projects.
Yeah, NPM is an interesting, and it's got its own unique characteristics. NPM from the get-go was, even though it was the package manager for Node, it was completely separate. And Isaac Schluter, the creator of NPM, he actually retained that as like his. I don't know specifically like what the licensing was, but it was very much that was not part of the Node project. This is something that Isaac did. And so he went and founded, you know, NPM to go basically make a business out of NPM.
Okay.
One of the reasons why he could do it, because it was actually, he was the license holder of that, not like Joyent or the Node Foundation or anything like that. So, you know, and so they've gone and I mean, they've been, you know, doing this now for a while. So they formed NPM, the company. It is now offering, you know, NPM as a service that and now they have a paid model for doing, you know, it's very common, you know, you have public repos versus private. So they're charging for private repos. And then just recently they have a new version of it that's geared more towards enterprises. So, and I believe this is basically you have your, it's now instead of having the global NPM population of modules, it's really going to be like you get to decide what's in that. So it's not just your own private ones, but also like what public ones do you want to be part of that as well. So just, but again, just really smart approach of like, hey, NPM's out there, it's still open source, it's free, you don't have to pay any money for it to use it, but if you want some of these value-added things, like you can go ahead and do that, and they can have a very good business model around that. Until, of course, AWS decides to...
Yeah, I was going to say, actually, this is yet another another one that AWS can pick up.
Yeah. But I mean, it's a great... It's like, this is one of those things where there's probably not a lot of customers that are yelling at AWS saying, oh, I wish you had a package manager for Node and package manager for Python. Mm-hmm. Probably not hearing that nearly as much. Although, you know, they did do this with Docker images. So yeah, they have ECR, and that definitely is a competitor to Docker Hub. So, you know, who knows, but for right now, it's still a good approach for them.
Right on. Yep. Well, thank you very much. What a fun conversation.
And yeah, it was.
Yeah. We'll be back here next week. Thanks for listening.
All right. Thanks, John. See you later.
Bye.
Well, dear listener, you made it to the end. We appreciate your time and invite you to continue the conversation with us online. This episode, along with show notes and other valuable resources, is available at mobicast.fm/50. If you have any questions or additional insights, we encourage you to leave us a comment there. Thank you, and we'll see you again next week.